Let's go in-depth on Hawkeye sports with the Des Moines Register. It's time for Hawk Central on 1460 KXNO.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone, and welcome to a Black Friday edition of the Hawk Central radio show on a Wednesday, of course. I'm your host, Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register, and we'll be joined shortly by my Hawkeye colleague on the Register's Hawkeye's beat, Kennington Smith. All right, the stakes have gotten higher every week somehow, and now the Iowa Hawkeyes have remarkably put themselves in a win and in position for the Big Ten Conference Championship game. I'm sure you all know that already, but just had to say that. Every week we have kind of talked about the wild scenarios that it was going to take, and I even remember some, one of our podcasts about 3 weeks ago just talking about, like, we know this isn't going to happen, but just in case, here's what needs to happen. And it's all happened except for the last step, which is Iowa beating Nebraska on Friday at Kinnick Stadium. And then the Hawkeyes would go to Indy, finish 8-4, and on a five-game winning streak. If they do that, Kennington Smith, the Hawkeyes and us, which I'm looking forward to the most, can sit back and relax and watch Michigan State or Michigan versus Ohio State on Saturday at 11 a.m. And we'll just see who the Hawkeyes are going to play.
Yeah, that game has so many national implications, but within the bubble of Iowa, it has very regional implications for what it could mean for Iowa going to the Big Ten Championship and who they would play. There's been a lot of conversations about, you know, should Iowa even go and potentially get embarrassed? And I think now the conversation is shifting to who is the better matchup for Iowa. Obviously, they've played them both this year. Both of those games kind of came with their own interesting storylines and nuances. So with the team as confident as they are right now, the way that they're playing and just the way that they're locked in, it kind of poses the question of, not to the point of you think Iowa outright win the Big Ten Championship, but they would make it more interesting than their previous two meetings. But obviously that starts with beating Nebraska, and that seemed to be right. The vibe of the team on Tuesday was just, we understand what the implications are, but we can't even get to that point unless we actually win on Friday against an opponent that has given Iowa trouble. I mean, Nebraska's had countless losing seasons in a row, maybe six, maybe seven in a row, but the last four or five meetings have been extremely close. So this is not a gimme by any means, and it doesn't look like the program is treating it as such.
Yeah, I just kind of wanted to talk about what it would mean. Obviously, yeah, they have to win this game. It's not going to be easy by any stretch of the imagination. We'll get into that in our five big questions. There's my tease later in the show. But what it would mean, Kennington, to get to Indianapolis. I know we've talked about it here. The Big Ten West gets ragged on nationally. You know, it's the ACC coastal, you know, of the Midwest, right? Well, is that the bad one?
Yeah.
The coastal's the bad one.
Yeah.
Okay. but, I mean, there's just something to be said about your team is going to be playing on that Saturday night on Fox. 10 million plus viewers. I mean, you're going to be facing a huge brand one way or the other that is intrigued at least to see, okay, is Ohio State going to get the one seed or the two seed? And then you've got a chance, though, if you can just get there to pull that upset. And you're just, you get that 3.5 hours on a Saturday night in the prime, you know, Saturday in college football, essentially, championship Saturday. You are in that mix. And as you know, as much as the Big Ten West gets ragged on a little bit, I feel like Iowa has totally earned the way this if they get there. And just think, I mean, if you go 6-3 in the Big Ten and you lose two of your losses, or Ohio State and Michigan, I mean, I feel like you kind of deserve to go.
Yeah, I mean, there's no backdooring their way into it this year. I mean, they had to go out and take it. They had to win five in a row, which if it seems like now it's kind of like you might want to, or people on the outside might try to maybe discredit this run because the opponents haven't been spectacular. But following the Ohio State game, the conversation was, what's the point of even playing the rest of the games? Like, we should just look ahead to the offseason and look ahead to the 23 season. So, I mean, the fact that there's a potential for a 6-3 finish is something to be celebrated. And here's where I'm at with what it would mean to go to the Big Ten Championship game for Iowa. they've only been there two times in the era of divisions in the Big Ten Championship. And you can ask Hawkeye fans, or you can ask members of the beat, or maybe even some Iowa coaches, if they'll be candid enough with you, that they've had teams that have been good enough to win the West that haven't won the West. So to hang another banner and to collect another trophy and to get back to this game would mean a lot, because it is not a given. I mean, they went once in 2015 and then not again until last season. So it's not an opportunity that comes around every year, and you have to capitalize on it as the Big Ten is going away from divisions. And when you say the spotlight and the opportunity, I look at it from the lens of what it would mean for the actual players on Iowa's roster.
That's a great point. That's a great point.
Think about the potential of them playing Ohio State. Heisman voting would start after the conference championship. Let's say they're playing against Ohio State and Caleb Williams puts on a show in the Pac-12 championship on a Friday night and the spotlight is on CJ Stroud, but your Noah Shannon or Lucas Van Ness or Seth Benson or Riley Moss, all these guys on defense who have an opportunity to potentially make themselves some money if they make life hard on CJ Stroud, and maybe the conversation coming out of that Big Ten championship would be, oh man, Iowa's defense on this spotlight in the second go around against Ohio State's offense played so well, and look at all these guys who stepped up. So there's an opportunity for them to go out there and kind of make a name for themselves as well. So huge, huge opportunity, a huge platform. And again, only 10 teams get a chance to play in these type of games. Only 5 power conferences, only a handful of teams will get a chance to play on that spotlight. Right. So, you know, for a program like Iowa, I don't think that you can underestimate what this moment could mean for the program and then the fans and then obviously the players on the field.
Yeah, so exactly. Awesome, awesome analysis there. And that is what Iowa is playing for on Friday at Kinnick Stadium. That is what you get the trophy, yeah, but you get all the stuff that goes with the trophy, and that includes a whole week of an opportunity a lot of these guys have dreamt of their whole lives. And think about even just Spencer Petras, just to have, if he could get this opportunity. And we're going to talk about seniors here in a moment. This is a guy that got hurt really bad in that Big Ten championship game. Now, Iowa probably wasn't going to win it anyway, but at that point. But they were only down like 14-3, right? I mean, when he got hurt. So, it was, somebody like that just didn't get to finish that game. Now he gets to maybe go back. There's just so many good stories here. And again, the redemption story against the fact that they face both these teams in the regular season, all that stuff rushes to the top of my mind right now. Speaking of resiliency, that's something I wrote about this week. Thanks to everyone out there. I've really gotten amazing feedback on this column. It's up at hawkcentral.com. Went live on Tuesday. This class has been through a lot. I don't know if you got a chance to read that, Kennington, but and you weren't here for some of it, but I know you experienced COVID where you were back then. Yeah. And here, let me just sum it up succinctly here. 2008, for this, if you're a fifth year senior, in 2018 and 2019, you experienced some really nice bowl wins, some really nice finishes to those seasons. The Hawkeyes trounce USC. I mean, a national brand. How often does that get to happen? To win the Holiday Bowl, a 10-win season. That was like a really good Iowa team. And then all of a sudden, 2020 hits. And this group got, dealt with COVID. It dealt with the racial bias outcry of 2020. The Big Ten season was canceled. Then it was back. Then all of them had to go through daily testing. That was not fun for them. lots of quarantines, lots of isolations. 2 losses to start that season. Obviously, a lot of questions around the program. You lost, obviously a lot of controversy around your program. A lot of people telling you that you got to get out of there. These guys stuck with it. They won their last 6 games that season, played as well as anyone in the Big Ten. And they probably would have ended the Jim Harbaugh tenure had that COVID Champions Week game been played, but Michigan backed out with COVID. Harbaugh kept his job, renegotiated his contract, came back. Because that was a bad Michigan team, and Iowa would have crushed them. So that was 2020. 2021, I mean, just think, Kennington. Number 2 in the country, highest in the program in 36 years. You were here for this. How low was that low the next 3 weeks?
It was... It was bad. I mean, it was...
It was ugly.
Yeah, and I mean, we're in the midst of this, you know, three-game losing streak that we have. It was very comparable. I mean, it was on the same level. Yeah. Like, it was... Mm-hmm. I mean... It was on the same level. We don't, you know, have to get into like why it was so bad this year compared to last year, and you know, try to compare traumas or
yeah, whatever. Yeah, yeah.
But it was a very low moment.
And somehow, I mean, last year, how miraculous was that that they pulled the Big Ten West out of their hat last year, and they got help, obviously, but they won those four games in November. And then you've almost seen it just repeat this year. You guys know the story this year. I mean, seven games, offensive, you know, the worst offense in the country. And here they are, potentially five games with a five-game win streak if they can beat Nebraska to get to Indy. And just an amazing group of seniors, Kennington. I mean, Campbell, Laporta, Moss, those three guys all announced they were coming back. I mean, where would they be without them? You think about Merriweather and what he's meant to the program. Shannon, Evans, Wagoner. You know, Petrus, Potabom, I should have done, you know, looked at a list here. I mean, Terry Roberts, guy that's not going to play this week. Dallas Kratith, you know, a guy that stuck with it, stayed till the end. There's just so many neat senior stories here. There's 27 of them. It's 27 of them honored on Friday.
Yeah, huge senior class. And Kirk Ferentz didn't say this on Tuesday about the senior class specifically, but a point that he made about why the defense is so good pointed to the senior class when he said, we have impact players at every level who are like seniors and have been through it. You have Wagoner, Evans, Shannon on the defensive line. You have Campbell, Benson at the linebacker core. Then you have Riley and Kayvon in the secondary. You just have so much veteran experience. And those type of things cannot be, you know, underestimated in a season like this or even, you know, in a season in general. So this is a senior class that I feel like, and again, I haven't been out here very long, so I don't want to speak in hyperbole, but I feel like this has to be one of the more memorable senior classes, at least of Kirk Ferentz's tenure. I don't know where they would rank in terms of winningest classes in his tenure.
It's pretty high.
But yeah.
They're 42 and 17. They're 42, yeah. And the best of the Ferentz tenure was 45 and 17. Now, they also had their season, this group had their 2020 season shortened by COVID, so
right.
They could have had more games there.
Right.
So very, very similar. And the best years of the Ferentz, the best 5-year stretches is 45 and 17, 2001 through 2005. You know, and Hayden's best was 46 wins over a 5-year stretch,
yeah,
83 through 87. So this is up there.
Yeah, one of the winningest classes, and obviously that early 2000s runs did have a pair of Big Ten championships, but if this senior class could walk it off with two division titles back-to-back, I mean, again, just think about, you know, the amount of trophies that they've been able to collect for the program. So it's a pretty iconic class, and I mean, you think it's hard to imagine what this team would look like without these type of guys. And that's going to be the case next year, obviously, when, you know, Laporta and Campbell and Moss leave. But you just think about guys who have just been program staples for so long. And when it seems like it's from a fan's perspective, even from media perspective, when you just kind of start to you know, you just assume like, oh yeah, Jack Campbell's going to be, he's going to be there. He's going to be great. Riley Moss is going to be at cornerback. He's going to perform well. It's kind of hard to just like remember every single thing that they've been through and all the things that they've been accomplished. But that's kind of what this moment is for and what Friday is going to be all about.
Petrus, I think I mentioned in that list, obviously, we talked about him and the potential for a 6-year return on our Tuesday night YouTube podcast. So make sure to check that out. And also Reggie, I haven't mentioned him, but he's been, 100 plus catches in his career. I know there are others, but those are some of the highlights of seniors. All right, let's move on to basketball. Kennington, you're listening to Hawks Central from the Des Moines Register and KXNO. I'm Chad Lystico with Kennington Smith, resetting things here. We will get to five big questions later in the program to preview Iowa-Nebraska on Friday. But we did want to take a few minutes here at the top of the show to spend a little time on Iowa basketball on the heels of the Hawkeyes improving to 4-0. They win at Seton Hall. They enter the AP Top 25. And, absolutely routed Omaha 100-64 on Monday, Kennington. And now they will go to Florida, where they're going to play two Power 5 schools. They play six straight Power 6 schools, I should say, in basketball. So a lot of big games coming up. Let's start with Chris Murray, right? I mean, that has to be the place we start. You know, they talked about at Big Ten Media Days, you know, kind of getting tired of the comparisons to Keegan, but he knows it's going to happen. But, man, it's you can't avoid it at this point. I mean, it feels like we're literally back at last year when Keegan was dominating the way Chris looks right now.
Yeah. I think that it's – in some ways, though, I think that the comparisons are a little bit different in tone now, because I feel like before the season it was, can Chris Murray live up to Keegan? And I think that in these first few games it's kind of shifted to, like
– Yeah,
Chris
he
Murray,
can.
He's like, you know – I've seen some people on Twitter like, can Chris Murray be better than Keegan? Like, so it's kind of funny to think about it from that lens. So I think that the comparisons like from in that light have kind of shifted a bit, which makes it a little bit more.
It is more fun.
It makes it more fun that way.
It's like, oh, you're not doing as well. You're only averaging 14.
Right.
You know, he's literally averaging like more than Keegan already, 23.8. So.
Right. So, you know, it's funny. It seems like, you know, Chris. And we get a chance to interact with him a lot. He is very laid back, easygoing. He's always having a smile on his face. It seems like he's having a lot of fun with it. And he kind of, after the Omaha game, kind of gave a little smirk. He's like, you know, I want to take this team as far as I can, and I want to do what Keegan did, and maybe even do a little bit better.
Yeah.
And just to give a full picture of what he's done, and obviously there are 30-something more games to go, but there was a stat that Iowa Basketball tweeted out. Just going to read it. In four games this season, Chris Murray has 95-plus points, 30-plus rebounds, five or fewer turnovers, shooting 60% from the field and 100% from the free throw line. There is no player in Division I in the last 25 years that has done that in a four-game stretch, period, at any point. Just think,
even to start a season, just any point.
Any point, in any span. So just think about that. What he's done. I mean, it's literally a historic start to the season. And like I said,
he hasn't even played a ton of minutes yet.
Right. So, and he's making it look fairly easy. I feel like people can even look at him playing and feel like he could be more aggressive, and he could be doing even more to assert himself in the offense and call for the ball and kind of dominate a little bit more. So. He's just getting started, but I think that the Seton Hall game was very good for him to kind of put himself out there and kind of establish himself as one of the more premier players in the country. It feels like Keegan didn't have that opportunity until later in the year just because of how the schedule set up. And there's an opportunity for Chris to continue to do those things as he and Iowa are about to enter into a period where they're going to have a lot of marquee matchups.
Absolutely. I listed a bunch of basketball topics here. Let's just kind of buzz through a few of them. Tony Perkins' injury kept him out of Monday's game. Lower leg. I was not real encouraged by what McCaffrey said afterwards. You're shaking your head. Yeah. Just sort of like it's something that's built up over time is kind of the tone. But maybe he'll be back Friday. But if it's something that he has to deal with all year, you just feel for the guy because he's been dealing with shoulder since high school, and it's the shoulder finally got better. You hope this isn't, for his sake and Iowa's sake, long-term deal. But I think we talked about this off air. If Iowa doesn't have Tony Perkins, this is that's alarm bells because they need him bad.
It significantly limits how far this team can go. You feel good about what Aaron Ulis or even Connor McCaffrey could bring to the team from a ball handling perspective, taking care of the ball and playing good defense. But what Tony can do offensively and the steps that he has taken offensively.
And defense.
Defensively he's great, but offensively what he's been able to do, the points he can score, how he can score, being able to shoot the ball, I mean, it just adds a whole another element to Iowa's team. So you hope that he can get healthy. I mean, from my vantage point on Monday night, he was walking with a pretty considerable limp, and McFran said after the game, you know, he's hurting right now. So he said he would like to think that he's going to play on Friday, but you know, we'll see what happens. So this is a really big opportunity for one, Aaron Ulis obviously stepping into that starter role at point guard, but the conversations that we've had about the depth of Iowa's bench, this is a big opportunity for them as well, because you take Ulis off the bench, you put him into the starting lineup. Now everybody who's on the bench has to move up one spot, and Fran is going to have to rely on these guys off the bench in this critical stretch. So it'll be really interesting to see how they respond and the steps that they can take between the Omaha game to now we're in the midweek to what happens this weekend in Florida.
Last topic here, and obviously I'm opening up a huge can of worms. We're bringing this up at the end of a segment, but we're going to try to we'll get through it. Connor McCaffrey last night tweeted, "Hawk fans that came tonight, thank you. This is not at you, and this is not a complaint at all. But this was probably the worst regular season crowd we have had in my career here, coming off a huge road win." He's talking about Seton Hall. "We have some big games coming up. Please help us out with the energy you bring." That's what's your reaction on that?
I agree with him. It was empty in there. 30 minutes to tip off, there it was empty. And it's hard to estimate how many people are, because it's a big space, but it was easily the fewest people that I've seen since I've been on the beat. And it just was not a energetic atmosphere. And it really is unfortunate, because that was Chris's career high type of night. And I understand the opponent wasn't great, but I think it is also important to note for the fans who were kind of tweeting it back on Twitter, like, "Oh, it's Omaha. What do you expect?" It's not like Iowa scheduled that game. They had to play that game because it was the precursor for the Thanksgiving tournament. Yep. So it's not like they sought out this, you know, a bye game, for example, which every school in the country plays them. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it's just another layer to what seems to me, at least in my 18 months here, as an ongoing conversation of what is it going to take to get more people into Carver consistently. And I think that the overarching point here, and Connor alluded to this with the road win, is you have a team that is a perennial tournament team that has, at least the last 2 years and potentially for a third year, a national player of the year type of player. Yeah, right. They play an exciting brand. They score a lot of points. They're fun to watch. And it just seems like the interest is not there just based on home attendance. So I'm trying to figure out what the disconnect is there.
Yeah, I mean, that's, like I said, opening way big of a can of worms here. But it is a holiday week. I'm not making excuses, because it is a consistent deal. Maybe Connor's, what I'm saying is, maybe his tweet will kind of, I think it was well-timed, because he didn't do it, you know, he didn't do it after a loss or something, or wasn't bitter. And it was well, I thought the tone was not harsh, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been here 6 years. If he says it's the worst in 6 years, yeah, I mean, he knows. He's been here a while. So, obviously the crowds will pick up, but maybe it's a little bit of a, hey, come on, pay attention, something special is brewing here. So that's kind of what I took for it, and just wanted to point that out. So anyway, we got to get moving, Kennington. Almost time for five big questions, and we'll do that next. Kennington Smith will dive into Friday's matchup, Iowa versus Nebraska, on Hawk Central 106.3 KXNO.
Everything you need to know about the Hawkeyes. It's Hawk Central with the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO.
Welcome back to Hawk Central Radio here on 106.3 KXNO. I'm your host, Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register. With me, as always, is Kennington Smith of the Register. All right, Kennington, Iowa versus Nebraska on Friday, 3:01 p.m. kickoff on Big Ten Network. So don't be late. Don't think you can tune in at 3:07. The game's going to start at 3:01. Brandon Godden and Jake Butt on the call. Brandon does a great job. I actually spoke with Jake this week in advance of the matchup. He wanted to learn some more stuff about Hawkeyes. Great duo. Looking forward to it. Brandon called last year's game against Nebraska as well. So, Kennington, let's get into five big questions. Number one on the list, how big of a deal is Casey Thompson's return from injury? He came back last week for Nebraska. He's the quarterback. You'll remember this. We did our quarterback rankings before the season. I think I had him number two, and I think you might have as well.
Yeah, now he was up there for me.
Yeah, this is a good quarterback. He missed 2.5 games. Nebraska's offense went in the tank without him, but he's had some good numbers. And the game before he got hurt, If anybody watched this on TV, it was 43-37 against Nebraska. I think that was Iowa's bye week, right? I can't remember. I think
yes,
it was.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. And he threw for 354 yards. And, yeah. You know, and that was a really entertaining game. So what I'm saying is, how big of a deal is it now that he's returned to action and now he is starting on Friday against the Hawks?
No, I mean, it's definitely a big deal. You think about it, he was somebody who was starting at Texas last year and was putting up, you know, highlight-ish real numbers there as well. And what they had behind him really was in question. I mean, with all due respect to those guys, they're D1 athletes, but you know, the numbers are just, I mean, the
you can criticize someone if you say it with all due respect.
Yeah, with all due respect, I mean it. Yeah, so Iowa fans saw Logan Smothers last year when he had to fill in the Nebraska game, and he, you know, Nebraska was conservative with him. They kept it on the ground. He played against Michigan. I'm just reading off the game logs. 4 for 8, 15 yards. The week before against Minnesota, 5 for 10 for 80 yards. I mean,
yeah,
it's
totally different stat lines.
Yeah, it's no threat compared to what Casey Thompson brings to the table. So it's obviously a much bigger challenge. Palmer from Nebraska, the wide receiver, is a dynamic receiver, and they're not able to utilize him the same if Casey Thompson is not in the game. So
great point.
A whole different energy when he's in the game for Nebraska. I mean, he played well against Wisconsin. I mean, he tossed a couple touchdowns, and they made it really hard for Wisconsin in that game. And they had to scratch and claw and come back for a win. And Kirk Ferentz noted that on Tuesday. Just, you know, it's not easy to beat Wisconsin. Iowa knows that all too well. And Nebraska gave him everything that they can handle. So to have him back and that, you know, kind of be his first game back, another week of practice, I expect him to present – you know, pretty formidable challenge for Iowa's offense, all things considered.
Yeah. He went 12 for 20 for 106 and 2 touchdowns against Wisconsin. Those were some of his lower numbers of the year. But he has had some big games. He did lead them to their 2 Big Ten wins against Indiana and Rutgers, obviously. You know, not marquee wins by any means, but he did lead them to those wins. I think it is a big deal. I think that is something concerning. And what the defensive guys that we talked to on Tuesday talked about Kennington was that Nebraska's offense doesn't have an identity, but like that makes it like weird to prepare for. Like Jack Campbell seemed like his mind was like racing. Like we got like so many things. We have no idea what they're going to do. Yeah. Like Minnesota, you knew exactly what they're going to do. Wisconsin, same thing. With this Nebraska offense and with Casey Thompson, they could do anything.
Yeah. It's like, no, that is their identity. No identity is an identity. Literally, you have no idea what you're going to get on any play. It's a mixed bag. And Campbell said that that's important for Iowa's defense because every week, what is the number one thing that Iowa's players talk about? Communication, being in the right place at the right time, staying on their keys. If you have no idea what the offense is doing because they literally just have no tendencies, it's going to be difficult to be on one accord. So I think Jack Campbell said that he's like, you don't know what coordinator you're going to get. They've had a lot of coaches.
He's like, they're a new coordinator every year, he said.
Don't know what coordinator you're going to get. They have a lot of coaching changes. So he's just like
trolling a little.
Right. Yeah, a little bit. But you truly have no idea what you're going to get. And in that regard, it might seem like a disadvantage for Nebraska, but it actually turns out to be somewhat of a disadvantage for Iowa. So I guess that's the ironic part about this.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you're a Nebraska fan, you hope you know what your own offense is doing. but anyway, that leads us to question number 2, Kennington, and 5 big questions, which is kind of related, I guess, as we carried on the conversation. But number 2 is, what factors make this a scary matchup for the Hawkeyes? I could go through a bunch of them. The one that tops, you know, comes to the top of the mind is in the Scott Frost era, these are Scott Frost players still. They've played Iowa to a tense game to the finish. Iowa won by a game-winning field goal in 18, game-winning field goal in 19. Had to get a sack fumble as Nebraska was driving to win by 6 in 20, the COVID year. And then last year, even after Iowa was rallied to take the lead, needed a Jamari Harris interception at the goal line to survive against Nebraska. So to me, right off the top, that makes this a scary matchup because it's been so close the last 4 years.
Yeah, I think that's what makes it a scary matchup in my mind is just I just envision a desperate and hungry team that just wants to end the year on some type of positive note. I mean, they obviously have not won a lot of games with Mickey Joseph as head coach, but they have played hard under him. So he obviously has the respect of those players. And this is a bowl game for them. And I know that when you get into these type of situations where there's a team that's heavily favored against a team with a losing record, and it's almost like a buzzword or a buzz phrase, like, oh, this is a bowl game for this team. But there is a trophy on the line, so you have to throw that caveat in there. This is an annual matchup where Nebraska has been on the losing end for the past 7 years, so you have to factor that into the mix as well. And then, all those things considered, when you have this rivalry game, there's an opportunity for Nebraska to ruin Iowa's season.
I mean, no kidding. Really ruin it.
Right. No, like the shift in energy and the amount of goodwill that will be lost with a defeat of Nebraska on Friday compared to what these four wins have meant. If I were to lose on Friday, it would be like it was for nothing almost. Like it would just it would all wipe away.
I agree.
And you would be right back into that souring point of what it was like after the Ohio State game. It would literally be like putting them right back into that situation. So that's what makes it dangerous from that perspective. I'm sure the Nebraska coaches are kind of talking it up to them as Iowa's coaches are talking it up to their players. Like, hey, they're going to come in here trying to, you know, ruin it. And on senior day at that, I mean.
Right.
So all of those things factored in, you know, I expect Nebraska to come out and try to play their hardest to win the game.
Yeah, I think we've successfully made, you know, Nebraska sound as good as he possibly can at this point. Let me throw one more at you. They have scored touchdowns on their first drive 5 times this season. So they are really good on their opening script. And if you recall, Kennington, last year when we went to Lincoln, they with Logan Smothers, they moved down the field, marched down, took almost 6 minutes off the clock, took a 7-0 lead on the Hawkeyes. So this is a team that can get you in a hole. And if you've got the nation's worst offense, or at least the Power Five's worst offense, as Iowa does, you don't want to be in too big of a deficit. I mean, we saw them miraculously get out of it last year, but to me, yeah, Nebraska has a history of losing one-score games. Yes, but you don't want to get in the, you don't want to, in this situation, you don't want to clench up, you know, start getting the fans tense, start getting everybody worried that things aren't going well. So that's what I'm saying. Like, this is a team that can pounce on you right out of the gate, and they are going to give you their best shot right out of the gate. And Iowa's got to be ready.
Yeah. And Nebraska's going to play aggressively. I mean, house money it's going to epitomize house money. I mean, Nebraska is not beneath anything. I mean, 3-and-out first possession. They might fake punt. They might try a fake punt. I mean, you literally never know
right.
just because they have nothing to lose. It's a 3-and-8. It's a 3-and-8 team. So I expect them to throw Jack Campbell used the term kitchen sink a lot on Tuesday. I would expect that type of effort from Nebraska.
Frankly, if you're a Nebraska fan, wouldn't you be disappointed if you came out vanilla and just did nothing?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Damn, go for
just
it at least.
Let it rip.
Let it rip. All right, question number three. Can Iowa's offense perform better against a 3-4 defense than it did versus Wisconsin? Kennington, this was you came up with this one on the docket, and it's a great one because this offensive line has had 3 out of 4 really good games. The one it didn't was against the 3-4 of Wisconsin, and it was bad. It was a bad, bad game for the O-line. So, honestly, like, what do you think? We talked to some offensive guys today. You think this will be better, markedly better than it was against Wisconsin?
I think there's a chance for it for sure. I mean, just from the lens of Nebraska, from a skill perspective, is not the same as Wisconsin. Like, there's not going to be a Nick Herbig for Nebraska that is going to terrorize Iowa's offensive line the way that he did. But I think this is going to be a barometer of growth, I think, for the offensive line. They talked a lot about the communication issues and what went wrong against that odd man front from Wisconsin and the correctable things that they worked on that George Barnett pointed out to them. This is an opportunity to show growth in that area against a team that statistically, you should have a significant advantage against this. You know, they're not the same defense as Northwestern, but at the time they played Northwestern, they were near the bottom of the Big Ten statistically in every category. And if you look at where Nebraska's defense ranks in the Big Ten right now, I mean, they're 13th or 14th in almost every category. So it is an opportunity for Iowa's offensive line to continue to gain confidence, but it is going to be a challenge for them because it's just a front that they don't see very often. So I think the potential is there, but I think it's just a matter of how much improvement can they show after, like, okay, you messed up in this one. Will you make those same mistakes again? I think is what I'm looking for with this offensive line.
Yeah, I think I think the opportunity is there for, dare I say this, an offensive breakout for the Hawkeyes. It'll be interesting to see how they learn from the Wisconsin game. This is a young offensive line. Can they take the lessons they learned against Wisconsin and apply them 2 weeks later against a 3-4 defense that is not nearly as good as Wisconsin's? I mean, this is a team that ranks 108th in the country in total defense, Nebraska. So this is one of the weaker defenses Iowa has faced all year. We've seen Iowa succeed pretty well against weaker defenses. You think about Nevada, you think about Northwestern. Purdue, to an extent, was one of the lower-ranked defenses they faced. They fared well against them. And then I look at the Minnesota game. I was actually pretty impressed with the way the O-line played. Spencer Petras had a lot of time to throw. There's a reason he was 15 for 24 for 211 yards, or was it 221, actually. They moved the ball pretty well outside of a couple bad snaps. And so I think that there is an opportunity here. I like Iowa's chances to put up some points, and I'm going to tease that to my prediction, I guess, later in the show. And even as good as Nebraska played against Wisconsin, you know, it was a 15-14 game. Wisconsin had to score in the last minute to beat them. Wisconsin still rushed for 250 yards in that game. So I think there's an opportunity for Caleb Johnson, an opportunity for LeSean Williams to have a big game. And by the way, yeah, so many people ask me about Caleb Johnson. Like, why didn't he carry the ball in the fourth quarter? Is he hurt? Iowa had 10 snaps against Minnesota in the fourth quarter. One was a kneel down. Three of them were backed up on their own 9-yard line when LeSean was in the game. And in that situation, we heard Kirk talk about Tuesday. They trust LeSean more, his knowledge of the offense more at this point.
Caleb made a critical mistake that...
I'll have to go back in the film and see what it was.
I don't know what it was, but Kirk had a little fun with that one today. I mean, he said that, you know...
Killed a drive.
He said killed a drive. Then he paused for a second and then went back into the mic and said, actually buried the drive. So he was having a little fun on Tuesday. But, you know, those are just type of the things that you deal with a true freshman. And I don't want to go on a tangent about Caleb. Yeah. But he's healthy. Yeah, he's healthy. But he's just very much raw. A lot of what he's doing out there is pure skill and not a lot of knowledge and nuance. So you kind of have to work with him. And be patient in that regard.
All right, we got a hustle. You're listening to Hawk Central from the Des Moines Register and KXNO. I'm Chad Leistig with Kennington Smith. This is Five Big Questions, Iowa, Nebraska. All right, number four, Kennington. We talked about this at length in our Tuesday night pod on YouTube, but this is a different tone to the question. Who steps up in the passing game with Sam Laporta out on Friday with a leg injury? Who steps up the most?
I think that an obvious answer would be Luke Lachey, just because he's stepping into that role. But I'm going to go with Nico Ragaini, actually. I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity for more wide receiver
senior
sets.
Senior day.
So he's going to be juiced up. And you could tell from the miss in the Minnesota game that was something that they really wanted to hit on. And I think it also just kind of points to the fact that Nico, I mean, he can get open. And he is, you know, healthy, getting healthier each weekend. He's been an impact player when he's been given the opportunity. We saw that in the Purdue game. So I feel like without Laporta, who is arguably Spencer's most trusted target, the second most trusted target being Nico, steps into that spot, and I feel like he's the one who's going to have the biggest day on Friday.
Ooh, bold prediction. I'm going to go – obviously, I'm with you on Lachey. I think Lachey is going to be great. The next great tight end type of thing. I mean, I'm not going to say it. Guarantee he's going to be great on Friday, but what a cool story that'd be, by the way, if they went back to face Ohio State again.
Right.
And his dad got to call the Big Ten championship game with his son on them. Anyway, then I could resuscitate that story I wrote. That would be awesome. I'm going to go Brody Brecht. We talked about him on the Tuesday Night Pod as well. Kirk Ferentz talked about this on Tuesday. He has actually practiced for several weeks in a row now, and you're seeing Spencer trust him in tough spots. He made two great tough catches against Minnesota. I'm not saying he's lighting the world on fire, but remember, Laporta had been playing some of that X receiver, and now Brecht maybe can be that X receiver, take those snaps. I'm looking at him. Remember they threw the deep shots to him and against Nevada and caught none of them? Maybe this is the week Brody Breck gets that deep shot.
Right.
Maybe I'll call my shot right here.
Yeah, maybe
deep shot to Brody Breck. I'm putting it in my prediction.
I like it. And, I mean, do not underestimate the value of practice because he has not practiced this much since he was in high school, literally. I mean, he came into Iowa, broke his hand, missed all of last year, right. Had bowl practice. That was a handful of practices. He missed all of spring, and then he missed June, July, and August with a hamstring injury.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he has played so minimal, and I think that, you know, Kirk to some degree says something like he could probably count on a few hands how many times he's actually seen Brody practice since he's enrolled on campus, which is telling. So he can stay healthy. It'll be interesting to see how he can develop as a receiver.
Yeah, I mean, he was a big-time recruit at the receiver position. There you go. There's your receiver. All right, number five, Kennington. We always kind of like to throw this in because it's a wide-open gamut here. We can throw whatever out there, but who has the edge in intangibles? Obviously, Iowa has won so many close games over these past 7 years against the Huskers. A couple blowouts in there too, but for the most part, this is Iowa's found a way down the stretch. What intangible are you looking at that maybe decides this Black Friday game?
Yeah, I think that one intangible, and it's something that has been a curse for Nebraska in the Scott Frost era, was special teams. I think if you look at their specialists, they are much more sound there than they have been in past years. I mean, just looking at the kicking game, you have Timmy Bleakrode. I hope I said his name right. Atlanta native. I just now saw that. But he is a first-year kicker, so battle the first-year kickers with him and Drew Stevens. But he's 8-for-10 this year, long of 46, so he hasn't really tested his leg to the extent that Drew Stevens has, but you feel comfortable with him because he has been a reliable kicker. I believe he's only missed one extra point this year, so he's been pretty locked in. And then on the punt side, obviously the block punt last year meant so much to Iowa's win. Brian Buscini, who is a transfer from Montana, FCS punter of the year. He has 16 punts of 50 yards this year, including a 74 yarder against Wisconsin. So
Cooper DeGene, be ready, man.
Right, exactly. No, really, because
I'm serious.
There's gonna be some important decisions made with his leg that could flip field position. And Iowa's offense, again, I know that they're winning, but they get backed up deep into their territory.
That's not good.
It's gonna be trouble. Right.
That's not good.
There's gonna be some potential for some bad things to go wrong. So field position is gonna be huge in this game, and I think Nebraska is much more equipped in those areas than they've been in the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, if turnovers are an intangible, which I know that's part of the game, but that's the one way Iowa really can lose this, if they, you know, revert to some bad turnover habits. But if they play clean football, that's good. And I think the intangible I'm pointing to here, Kennington, is you get, again, a night game atmosphere for essentially the Big Ten West title at home. I mean, how can you not capitalize on that? Especially in the second half, the lights will be on. It's going to be dark. The weather isn't going to be bad, so it should be a really good crowd. Should be a fun crowd. They've been waiting for something to cheer about this sold-out season, right?
Right.
And this is the game. They can have some fun and maybe celebrate a West Division title at the end. All right, Kennington, we got to move on. We'll get to our predictions next. And we'll also talk a little bit about the game, Ohio State versus Michigan. You're listening to Hawk Central on 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM.
Everything you need to know about the Hawkeyes. It's Hawk Central with the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO.
Welcome back to Hawks Central. Chad Lystico and Kennington Smith of the Des Moines Register. If you missed some of tonight's show, be sure to catch the podcast at hawkcentral.com, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hopefully you're listening to this on the way to visit family and friends, and you're going to have a wonderful Thanksgiving, which always means football and lots more football and a little bit of turkey as well. Big Ten games on the menu this week. Really the only one that matters outside of the one in Iowa City is Michigan at Ohio State. The Buckeyes, Kennington, are a 7.5-point favorite. I know how I feel about this game. what do you think happens?
Yeah, they're catching Michigan at a really good time. I mean, Michigan is so beat up, and Ohio State remembers what happened last year and how much that derailed their chances for a national championship. So Ohio State, healthier team at home. I expect them to win this game.
Yeah, I think they win in cover. I do.
Yeah. And then C.J. Stroud, I mean, Heisman moment for him. Him and Caleb Williams, it seems like, are neck and neck for the Heisman at this point. Huge opportunity for him to kind of, I guess, right or wrong from last year and go out, you know.
I just haven't seen J.J. McCarthy do – I mean, if he has an amazing game, he's got the talent. We just haven't seen it.
Right.
I mean, Stroud versus McCarthy right now, there's no contest.
Yeah, no, not at all. And it is kind of interesting because Michigan went to McCarthy to kind of hit that gear that Ohio State can hit, that like seventh gear to kind of take the top off.
Right.
And Michigan's offense has just not been that with McCarthy. So to expect it in a game like this, I think, is a little optimistic.
Yeah. I love watching this game so much because our work is done. We can watch it at 11 o'clock. 11 o'clock on Fox on Saturday. Should be fun. Anyway, that's when we can take a breath, but we can't take a breath now, Kennington, because we got to make our picks, our last picks of the year. We've been on fire in this segment this last half of the season. Hawkeyes, 10.5-point favorites. Should be good weather. Get out to Kinnick of low 40s, I think, temperature-wise. I mean, it was 40s on Tuesday, and it felt great. So get out there. What do you got, Kennington? How does this game play out? Who wins?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be a tough game. I think this is going to be a game where Nebraska is going to throw everything they have at them. You know, Iowa's offense, I think there's going to be those lows that we've seen all season, but I think there's going to be some good moments. I expect Iowa to win the game, and I think they're going to clinch the West. And I actually am going to pick them to cover barely. So I have two offensive touchdowns, one that's set up by a defensive turnover, and two field goals from Drew Stevens. So I'm going to go Iowa 20, Nebraska 9. So barely covering, but it's going to be
– 9.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough game.
You like their kicker? Three field goals, or is it touchdown and safety?
I like three field goals from the kicker. Casey Thompson is a gamer. I think he's going to put Nebraska's offense into some positions to possibly score. So yeah. that feels good to me.
Yeah, I'm going to say buckle up. This could be tense. I think Iowa has an opportunity, I think, to just put everything together on all sides, all phases, and blow Nebraska out. That potential is there. But I just feel like Nebraska is going to come to play. Iowa is going to be a little tense. I feel like the defense is wearing down a little bit. I know that's sacrilege to say the defense might have a little weakness, but you give up 312 yards rushing to Minnesota, you have my attention. I think the offense is going to have to do some stuff. I think it could be a little bit dicey at times. But the story of this season, Kennington, has been what? They find a way. Iowa's going to find a way. I can't tell you exactly how they're going to find a way, but I think they find a way. And I've got the Hawks winning 24-17 in a tight game at Kinnick. And a lot of celebration, a lot of hugs in the pit with the parents, with the players, all that stuff. And it'll be a nice moment for the Hawkeyes, and then we'll have 8 days to rest up for Indy.
Yeah, we're gonna get that in that scenario. Both of our scenarios, we're gonna get a lot of Kirk Ferentz tears and a lot of bashful player energy, shades of the Geno Smith. They wrote me off. I ain't right back though. There's going to be a lot of that going on in the postgame presser from the players, particularly Kayvon. If we get Kayvon in the postgame presser, he's going to walk up there with the shades, and he's going to remind some folks that they
he's already done that on Twitter this week. Yeah. He's put us all on blast. But to be fair, we didn't write him off. We just said they got to change the offense. So.
Right. Which
they still need to.
Yeah, they still do. Let's not get it twisted. They still do need to change some things.
All right, good stuff, Kennington. I will see you on Friday at Kinnick Stadium. And thank you, Hawkeye fans. This has been a really entertaining season, to say the least. Thank you for your interest, for listening. Catch our YouTube podcast on Friday evening. Man, last week's was lively. A lot of viewers in there for that one. We will do that Friday evening, win or lose. And join us next Wednesday night for another episode of Hawk Central here on 106.3 KXNO, where maybe just maybe, we'll be previewing a Big Ten championship game. All right. Thanks for listening. Good night, everyone.